Okay, so headphones in, and I think we'll have to switch a pair here and there. This is At Issue. Thanks for joining us this morning. We're on WGXC 90.7, and we're broadcasting from the Hudson Station. The Hudson Studio, I should say. And just one second. We are going to dedicate the whole show today to school budgets and school board elections. So we have in the studio George Lagonia, who is a school board member from the Taconic Hills School District. We have Jack Howe, who's superintendent of schools in at the Hudson City School District. Dan Barrett, the business manager at Hudson. Peter Meyer, who is a school board member on the Hudson City School District. And joining us by phone will be Lynn Sloniker, who writes the blog Unmuffled, which is an education blog mostly about Hudson. So, Lynn, are you there? No. What's that? Oh, and I'm sorry. And my co-host this morning is Deborah Gilbert, who is a reporter at the Columbia Paper.
Hi, and one of the reasons we're doing this show is because citizens across the county will be expected to vote May 17th in their school districts to approve the budgets.
So we have, why don't you say hi, Jack Howe, who's the superintendent at Hudson.
Good morning. I'm Jack Howe, superintendent of schools in the Hudson City School District.
So, Jack, could you just give us a little rundown about what people are going to be voting on when they get to the polls on next Tuesday?
On Tuesday in Hudson, they'll be voting on an approximately $40 million budget. And three school board election seats are also up. The budget includes a 9.8% tax levy increase with a budget-to-budget increase in spending of less than 1%. That reflects over $2 million in cutting that had to be done to fill a gap created by increased expenses and a cut in New York State aid.
Mm-hmm. So it's a challenge trying to deal with all these state cuts in particular, I guess, right?
And it's a challenge trying to deal with the state cuts because it's another year of dealing with state cuts. And at the same time, Hudson is about 50% reliant on state aid. So when the state cuts, and they cut us $1.3 million, it rolls through us with much more of an impact than it might in a district that is less dependent on state aid.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we have some real cost drivers in benefits, health insurance and retirement, that are fixed, that are mandated, that we contractually have to meet. So our revenues are decreasing and our costs are going up,
mm-hmm.
Creating some extreme challenges for the Board of Education.
So obviously you hope that people will vote yes for the budget, I'm assuming.
Well, I can't advocate for the budget, and
mm-hmm.
I won't do that here. I'm just here to provide information and to encourage all registered voters to go out and vote and
mm-hmm.
exercise their right to vote.
So could somebody explain, maybe Dan, who's the business manager. Dan, could you explain the difference between a contingency budget and, like, what happens if people vote no, what happens? Yeah, maybe we could share. Could you give him your headphones and then we'll swap back.
This year we're actually below the contingent level. The contingent level is there's a formula the state gives us to follow that it takes a CPI times most of your current budget, and it comes up with how much you can have for a budget for the contingent number. So we are, in fact, already almost $400,000 below the contingent level, and we will not have to. Well, there's a couple things can happen. When if the voters vote down the budget, the board has a decision to make, and that would be either they could adjust the budget and put it up again, they could adopt the budget as it currently is, and so it would be up to the board at that time. The The contingent budget also would eliminate any, if we adopt a contingent budget, the only things that would be, have to be taken out is equipment, and we don't have any equipment in our budget, so we're already minus that. The use of facilities is an issue when you go to contingent budget, because anybody who wants to use our facilities has to pay ahead of time. Other than that, the contingent budget will not really affect us that much.
So the budget is the same as if it's the contingency budget.
This is Peter Meyer. I'm on the board of this Hudson School District. Just for background, when we talk contingency, we're talking about a state law that says that all school districts are allowed to, regardless of what local voters say, all school districts are allowed to increase their school budget by the cost of living index the previous year. As Dan said, the official CPI last year was 1.6%. The school district, was allowed to raise our budget, increase our budget 1.6%. And as Mr. Howe pointed out, less than 1% we've raised it. So that essentially means the vote on Monday, on the 17th, means that the voters can say no, and the board could come back and say, sorry, we're going to impose this budget anyway, because it is a budget that is considered technically contingent already.
Mm-hmm. And Tacana Kills also, at last night's meeting, said that their budget is contingency level.
George Lagonia from the Taconic Hills. So would you let us know what's going on in Taconic Hills for the people?
Jack was very, very thorough with his analogy of what we're all going through. The fact is that we are getting huge cuts, and our budget goes up annually due to health benefits, just mandated things that the state makes us do. We, as a board, worked very hard with our superintendent to try to get our budget back to contingency, meaning that if in fact it gets voted down, which we don't believe it will, that we can run our school district as planned without being able to order equipment, possibly without just letting the public use certain facilities without charge. And it's a huge amount of work. We actually took some money out of some rollover money to try to pay some debt down, but we've taken huge financial aid hits. And our district is suffering just like everybody else, which means there's the potential that, you know, as of last night, we're going to lose some teachers again, something that we don't want to do. It's a very heartfelt thing to go through, to have to let teachers go, especially when we're faced with LIFO, last in, first out, which means that we lose possibly some very good young teachers. We don't keep a teacher that's better than the other. We just basically, if you're the last to get hired, you're gone. So that's just very difficult, especially when someone does a great job. So,
how many students do you have in Taconic Hills?
We're in that 1,500 range. Our population is going down annually. Every year we lose some due to the fact that certain people can't afford to live here. Mm-hmm. And we just lose kids. So since we moved in, I think we moved into the school 10 years ago, the new school at 1,900, we're down to 1,500. So that's, you know, something we're faced as time goes on. How we're going to utilize our building more effectively. Do we need, you know, actually student body should drive staffing. Mm-hmm. And so in a lot of cases, we do need to reduce. But at this point, to be forced to reduce because of budgets is a difficult thing to go through.
Right. Do you know how many teachers you'll be losing?
I think we figured it out last night that we're because we've lost a few more through attrition, there's the possibility we may lose as many as 7. But last year, we lost and we ended up hiring back. Certain course choices drives where teachers are needed. Now, we may lose a teacher in one area but hire someone else back to, you know, fulfill those needs. But all in all, again, you know, we're losing staff, and like I said, there's the potential to lose a great young teacher that we can't keep on because of budget cuts.
Mm-hmm. Jack, how many teachers are we losing?
This year, the projected cuts for teachers is 19. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, and one administrator, and then about 7 or 8 support staff. Last year, in this current budget, we trimmed 39 teaching positions. Wow. Hudson, like other schools in the state, in the nation actually, received EduJobs, federal funding for education jobs act in late August, and we applied all of that money to restore 10 positions. Mm-hmm. You know, George makes the point
that
about
that was stimulus money?
Yeah, right? ERA money.
ERA money, and yeah. That's not available this year. And that's another thing that's driving the challenges of the budget this year. The federal stimulus money, the funding cliff that's been talked about, we're at. There's no more federal money available at this time.
Right.
Hudson also has used some reserves to mitigate tax revenue or tax levy increase. We used some last year. We're using some again this year. But that's not something you want to plan as an annual budetary, you know, procedure.
Were you forced to cut a lot of physical education and sports?
What we did last year and again this year is we took the theme that we would look at the district K to 12 support staff, teaching staff, and try to reduce in each of those areas as opposed to eliminate any programs. So we've continued that this year, although this year we did reduce two physical education positions.
We're going to take a break for a minute, and we'll be right back. This is At Issue on WGXC. And we're back. We are in the Hudson studio here on WGXC. This is At Issue. We're talking about school budgets and school board elections. And we have Jack Howe, who is the superintendent of the Hudson City School District. We have Dan Barrett, who's the business manager at the City of Hudson Schools. George Lagonia, who is a Taconic Hills School Board member, Peter Meyer, School Board member from Hudson, and my co-host today is Deborah Gilbert from the Columbia Paper.
Hi, I just like to say one thing. This week, the Columbia Paper will be running a chart, so if you're in a school district in Columbia County, you can check that chart to see what the tax levy is, what the increase is, and all sorts of details about people running for school board and things like that that you'll be asked to vote on May 17th.
And so in Hudson, we have three candidates for three positions, is that correct?
We have three candidates for three positions. Peter Rice is serving in a position that it's an unexpired term, so that seat is up. Mary Daly's seat is up, as is Emil Meister, the president. Uh-huh. Emil and Mary have chosen not to run again, but Peter Rice, Rachel Kelly Frank, and Jerry Chapman are the three candidates for three seats.
And people could always write in a candidate.
People may write in, certainly, yes.
So, Peter Meyer, I wanted to ask you, you voted against the budget, so I was wondering if you might explain why that was.
Well, the 10% tax increase is too high. Quite frankly, as we all know, the economy stinks. It's the worst recession since the Great Depression. There's a lot of people hurting, especially our taxpayers. And I firmly believe that we need to do more work to get this budget down to a reasonable level of support for the taxpayers.
Can you say a little bit about your Share the Pain plan?
Well, that was actually last year's plan. It was didn't go very far, but we have more pain this year, and we should probably share more pain, this year, and that includes salary freezes as a start. Dan has done numbers on most of these, and they're only estimates until you get to the actual details. But a salary freeze we estimated last year, this is across the board salary freeze, could have saved $500,000. That's approximately 2 percentage points on the local tax revenue side. Busing, we always talk about busing. If we walk to school, last year's figure was based on about walking to school within a 1.5-mile range, and I think we had numbers of 500,000, another 2% savings to the local taxpayer. There's also discussion about the federal, counting federal funds. We get grants, federal grants to the tune of $1.4 million that is not counted in the budget as revenue. And I think if we did that again, we're both saving jobs and lowering the local tax responsibility. By the way, in terms of contingency, if I have to say I'm not speaking for the school board here. I'm speaking as a member, and I think George would probably is in the same position. When we speak like this, we're speaking as individual members, not representing the board, and I'm surely not representing the board here. I voted no on this budget. But if the budget is voted down, as Dan suggested, the board does have an opportunity to go back and look again at this budget and try and we can maybe entertain some of these other possibilities.
So we're going to take we're just going to see if we have our phone-in guest. Lynn, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Ah, great. Sorry about the glitch.
No problem.
On the phone, we have Lynn Sloniker. Lynn writes a blog on education, that mostly centered around the Hudson City schools, but I guess, you know, very often there are other items of interest for the education community at large. The blog is called Unmuffled. And so, Lynn, why don't you just introduce yourself and let us know what your thoughts about the school board and budget votes and...
my name is I'm Lynn Sloniker. I'm a resident of Hudson. I used to cover the school district for both the Register Star and the former Independent. And I do my own blog now. I've had two children in the district. My younger son is at the high school now. My older son's a graduate. So I have.
Did we lose you? Hello? You there? Okay, we lost you a little bit there.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So could you repeat the last, like, two sentences or so?
Oh, no, all I was saying is that, I'm in this position now where I see this as a reporter, but also as a parent and as a taxpayer.
Uh-huh.
So it's a complicated situation. I don't envy people who have to run school districts these days.
Right. You're so knowledgeable about the schools. I've always wondered if you would consider running for school board ever.
I did one year back in 2006.
Oh, okay.
Actually, it was a big year. I think that was the last time that there were more than two or three candidates for two or three positions.
Oh, okay.
It was a big year. It was the year following the contingency budget, actually, the defeat of the budget plan.
Uh-huh. Okay. You know, if you just feel free to join the discussion here. We've kind of been going around and talking. We've been bouncing a little bit.
I lost you.
You there? Hello?
Yes.
Okay, great. So
now you're back.
Okay. George.
One thing I want to say is, first of all, no matter what we say as board members, they think we speak for the whole board. That's not true. Yeah. But just because the levy is at 2.78 or 9 or 5, that doesn't mean that that's how much your taxes are going to go up. In some cases, it could be twice that. In some cases, it could be half that, depending on the town assessment. So you're not just voting for your taxes to go up by 10%. That's not a given. It really is up to your assessor and evals and everything. So I think when we put that number in the newspaper, I think it's not fair to the board's, in Hudson's case, for example. I don't think that's fair. Again, I don't know how that works, but I know in last year, even though our budget was 4.89, towns like Austlitz went up 10% because they did revals, and other towns went down. So I think that's important to note.
Yeah, generally, I mean, Hudson, of course, it's funny you should mention that because we've got a huge assessment problem in Hudson, so the taxpayers in Hudson have to have to really weigh this question of a 10% tax. This is a 10% local tax assessment increase by the school district, as you point out. It doesn't mean your taxes are going up. It's generally it's been running in the past. If we assess local taxpayers 1%, you could figure your taxes will go up about 75% of that. I mean, that's generally how it runs. So 10% probably means, if we're raising the tax levy 10%, it probably means roughly
about 6 to 8%
increase in your school taxes and city taxes.
Right. So it's not as big as everybody's making it out to be. Although I think it's big, not as big.
It's huge.
Yeah. Well, it is, but.
I have to say, for people that I've talked to in Hudson that normally don't pay much attention to the school or to school politics, have been sort of jostled awake by this 9.8 increase. And there are people who are talking about, for a lot of people in the city, this could mean whether they hold on to their homes or not. So it is significant. And the other thing, too, is that the city of Hudson has traditionally been underassessed. Mm-hmm. We're right now, I don't know if we're at 100%, and that's when you really get fucked when it comes to the school bill.
Yeah, allegedly, I think it's supposed to be 84% or something. But I mean, there's a lot of people would question that. With budgets as they are, I mean, how do you see a way out of these problems? I mean, is there any light at the end of the tunnel? What do you guys think?
Well, I mean, on the positive side, I think Hudson's making great strides with curriculum development. We're working hard on that. We just finished an amazingly successful book fair, the largest children's book fair in the state of New York, which is a wonderful thing to be proud of. Yeah. So, and I think if we go back and really put our heads, I mean, this hit us, as everyone says, pretty hard. But I think there's ways out of this. As I said, you know, we can start talking. We've got a walking school bus program now, mm-hmm. which is providing an alternative and should provide us some hope with being able to cut back transportation costs. We've got to talk to the we're negotiating with the teachers now, a new contract, and I'm hoping that they'll come around and give us a break. And again, as I said, I think we can consider an alternative like counting federal grants as part of the revenue. All of these things will help. Help our district, I think.
Were there concessions by the unions this time?
In Hudson, for the second year, I spoke to the union leaders of all of the unions, and last year, the support staff and the administrators followed my lead. I started in 2009 and haven't had an increase since I started. Just couldn't do that in these times. But last year, for the current budget, those units did not take an increase. The teachers' union, we were unable to come to an agreement with them last year or this year to take a wage freeze. So no, the biggest union, they represent, we have roughly 350 employees, and about 200 of those are just under our teachers in the Hudson Teachers Association. Mm-hmm. So when we look for the big give back, it was that union we were really looking for. Mm-hmm. But just to piggyback on that question about the future, I tend to look at the immediate future for the budgeting, and if we break it down simplistically to revenues and expenses, I think we have a pretty good idea where the revenues have been and are this year, and whatever form of a 2% tax cap is passed by the legislature, you know, the governor's proposing. Dan and I have talked about this already. We could look at what a 2% would mean for Hudson City School District, and if they're estimating about a 4% increase in the foundation aid, we could begin to see where our revenues are. And if we take those two figures, now this is it's premature right now, but if we take those two figures, that's roughly $800,000 to $1 million. That won't even cover our increases in health insurance and retirement costs. So Peter's right, when we go to the negotiating table, especially with our biggest union, they need to, taking his phrase, share the pain, they need to step up and work with us at these cost drivers that we know are not going to go down. And we need to have them become a better part of the solution, because our revenues are not going to go where they have been in the past, and we can't count on those. So those are some of the immediate challenges for us.
A number of teachers have said to me that they would be willing to take a pay cut or pay freeze, and it seems like the union might not be representing those people. Lynn, have you heard that?
I've heard that in the past. I haven't heard it as much this time. I think the teachers are in a really tough place overall, but I'm really surprised that I would be surprised that the leadership of the union wouldn't acknowledge that their membership is willing to make that kind of sacrifice, especially for young teachers. You know, teaching is a tough profession right now because kids coming out of school want to go into the classroom. They're looking at a really dismal future with cutbacks in school finance, and the situation, the system set up the way it is, where you're the first, you know, the last one in is the first one out. Mm-hmm. It's not very encouraging for somebody who wants to teach. And I think places like Hudson, with the scale, the school district is a nice small school district with a healthy number of teachers, that I would think that that there needs to be a conversation in the itself about what it wants for its colleagues.
I totally...
And then this is George Lugano.
Yeah, sorry about that. I think you're getting a call. I think it's completely opposite of what you said. I believe that the union does not... The leaders of the union do not discuss with the younger teachers. I think the younger teachers are starting to revolt a little bit and saying, we have to get involved. We have to talk to the older teachers, the more tenured teachers, to start talking about the fact that we only pay 10% of our health benefits. The rest of the world, like in my case, I pay 100% and many people pay 50%, and the health benefits are incredible. And we can't afford them. They just keep going up and up and up. And the more that are retired, there's going to come a point where we have more retired than working. And so the reality is that LIFO is a huge issue. It is a huge issue because, again, we look at some of these young teachers that work their tails off that will be gone because of the way the union set up.
And what was that like?
LIFO, last in, first out.
I think you misunderstand me. I'm not saying that that's happening. I'm saying that it should happen.
No, but it is happening where they're not having full representation of the younger teachers because...
Well, I don't see it. I'm speaking from Hudson. I don't see a dialogue happening. I see it's still very much... I mean, my point is that in order for things to change, those younger teachers do have to force that conversation to take place.
Then I'm in full agreement with you because that is very important right now that younger teachers start saying to everybody, look, we want to hold on to our jobs. When I graduate and I get hired, if I do a better job than someone that's been there longer, they should keep their job. Because the bottom line is that new teachers understand some of the newer technology. And sometimes, you know, sometimes it doesn't matter whether you're older or younger, sometimes you're just not a great teacher. And others are fabulous in their last years of teaching. But the reality is that the younger teachers are, the ones that we have at Taconic Hills are great. And
Well, besides, it's the younger teachers who pay the union dues.
Yeah, well.
Right. You know, at a certain point they age out. And I know. I think, because there are some really good teachers on the younger end of the spectrum in Hudson that I know from personal experience.
I just want to add. I just want to add one thing here to point out that we should watch our terms here. It's not necessarily younger teachers. We're talking about those new to the career and within maybe their first 1 to 5 years. When I think of some of the people that I've had to meet with over the past 2 years, to have the layoff notice with them, they certainly it's not age. It's new to the career, and I think that's an important distinction.
We have
a lot of people coming to education now, actually, as a career change. So it's not just nearly, it's not an age thing.
Lynn, I was wondering what where do you see the bright lights in the schools right now?
I think the focus on curriculum that has been, you know, that's been happening is good. The tough thing about curriculum is that it's a process, and it is not. There are no instant fixes, and it's a process, and everybody has to buy into it. Mm-hmm. And it's. But I think that the fact that there's a dialogue happening about curriculum is a very good thing. I would like to see more of a dialogue about instruction, about how teachers are delivering the curriculum in the classroom, and how teachers feel about what they're doing and think about what they're doing. Their subject matter focus is really important. I think I'm a little concerned about the corrective action plan at the intermediate school as it relates to curriculum, because I see other parts of the curriculum expanding and being supportive, whereas that's a little bit more restrictive. I understand that there's a rationale for doing that, but I think that that is a little troublesome.
We probably just lost a whole bunch of our listeners. So, would somebody want to explain what the restrictive?
Well, I mean, corrective action plan is something that a school goes into, quote unquote, when it doesn't meet certain state standards. Correct, Lynn and Jack?
Yes, and the
When it's been in improvement status, right. When the state has to do with the test results. And performance level.
The test results will identify areas such as math or ELA, English Language Arts, right. And then it'll identify subgroups, minority students or economically disadvantaged students, special education students, and then a corrective action plan has to be the school's, in this case, intermediate school, the school's very targeted plan as to what they're going to do to address improvement in the areas in the subgroups targeted by the assessment results. So the fact that it might be restrictive, it's set up to be so. And I would say, kind of jumping on Lynn's point there about things that go on, before I became a superintendent, I spent over 20 years in the classroom as a teacher, many of those in Hudson. And some of the conversations that don't come to the light of day, or that certainly don't happen at board meetings, are very much focused on instruction, strategies, techniques, learning styles, what we can do to help students improve. I know for a fact, because I sit in on these meetings and I go through our schools on a regular basis, that those conversations are happening regularly. The fact that they don't that they're not shared out is maybe a concern, but they are happening at department meetings, at grade level meetings, at building meetings. That's definitely a focus of the schools.
The big change in that regard is the alignment across all grades and within the school grades. That's right. I mean, I know teachers have always talked about instruction. They've obviously cared about it a lot, but I think the huge change, and this is in part driven by state mandates, is to get the kindergarten teachers talking to the 11th grade teachers, talking to the 6th grade teachers. And this is, I invite any of the listeners who want to participate in this. We have a board, has a curriculum committee, which is pretty active and pretty dynamic, and we tend to meet once a month. And a lot of good stuff is going on in that, and it begins to get to what Jack's talking about in terms of focusing on curriculum. I mean, I think that, as Lynn suggested too, the focus on curriculum is really key to this, and we're beginning to do it. So I'm pretty hopeful, but as Lynn says, it's not going to happen overnight. Mm-hmm.
The good thing about corrective...
And I think that's, too, the point about instruction. I understand that takes place privately. But I think that a more public discussion about what goes on in the classroom in relation to the development of a fully formed curriculum would help, especially in a community like this that does feel detached from the schools in some regards.
The good thing about corrective action is it opens up federal funds that are given to the school to help teachers with professional development and to offer supplementary educational programs. And as a reporter, I went to a writing workshop this winter taught by a wonderful educator from Prattsburg. And it's just great what teachers learned. Teachers across all disciplines in the school learned at the intermediate school. And I heard they were getting great results right away from some of the programs, the workshop ideas that they got at these meetings. So, the news is not all bad. There's also great new software helping teachers map curriculum across buildings. And I think that will improve communication among educators and administrators and teachers and will help going forward.
Right.
Right, we're in about the second year of that curriculum mapping in Hudson, and it's a great program. And as you said, the one of the advantages of the corrective action plan, we were able to get funds to hire a company to do a curriculum audit for our K through 6 grades, and that was enormously helpful in terms of telling us what we needed to do and where we needed to go in the future. So yes, there are good things happening. We could use all the community support interaction. As I said, we've been having good meetings, curriculum committee meetings. Public's invited to all of these, and if they have any concerns or questions, please check the district website or get in touch with me directly, and be glad to put you in touch with the meeting dates.
So I know this is a big question, but we know that in Hudson schools, some kids do really well, and some kids just don't get there. So what do some of you think about why are the reasons for that? I mean, you know, is it parenting? Is it socioeconomic problems? Is it, you know, why do you think that is?
I would say it's probably all of the above. It's mm-hmm. It's a multifaceted challenge for us. You know, with the assessments that we have, and we certainly have a lot of them, we can begin to get data back on how our students perform on certain assessments, and then we can drill down to that to look at some of the academic root causes for what's going on and where the performances may be falling short. But certainly we have to look at the district at large, the communities that our students come from. Then when they come into the classroom, the preparation of the teachers that are in front of them, the support and preparation of those who support the classroom, the administrators. So there's then the communication piece that we've talked about today. So if it were only one thing that we could mm-hmm. do to solve this, we would have done it long ago. It's just a huge problem that we work at. But I think data and data-driven and research is very, very important. But I don't think we can lose the other side of looking at the community and addressing the issues that students bring to us to the schoolhouse door, which is difficult in itself.
One thing I think that needs to be pointed out, and Lynn has a great essay in her current blog, Unmuffled, which sort of goes to this point, but that is to get the district and the whole education community to think not in terms of challenge, but in terms of educating our kids. And I mean, whatever district you go to, they face that. That's the challenge. How do we educate our kids? So we tend to be overly focused in Hudson for all kinds of reasons about kids who are failing, kids who aren't making this subgroup. But I think the bigger point is how do we educate all of our kids in the best manner that we can? And I think I think we're beginning to see that as the focus, I hope.
Jack, could you tell us a little bit about your work as a reading mentor?
Yes, one of the literacy programs that Hudson City School District opened up this year as a new initiative is called Power Lunch with Mr. Meyer. Peter Meyer is a member in that as well. We go in one day a week. I go in on Tuesdays, and I think Peter does as well. And our student the student is the mentee, brings his or her lunch, and we sit and read a book to that student while they're having lunch. At times they'll read to us. My student is a voracious reader, and I love to listen to him read. And obviously we don't always just read, and he doesn't always just eat his lunch. We talk about a lot of things.
I eat lunch too.
I saw Mr. Meyer yesterday eating some vegetables. But sometimes we talk about the brothers and sisters, what they do on the weekend. It's great. You get to know a young person really well, and you get to be a part of their, not only just their life, but their literacy life, which is a huge program. And it's really been well received by the community. The numbers of people that I see from across the community in the intermediate school library every time I go in is very, very impressive. People are committed to our young people. They're committed to education, and they're committed to literacy.
And it's just...
Jeff, is there any plan to continue that next year or to expand it?
We will look to continue it next year, and I'm sure Lisa Dolan, who spearheads this particular initiative, will look to expand it in some new ways that I'm not aware of yet, but she'll bring them to me.
Mrs. Dolan told me that she hopes that mentors will stay with their mentees for over a number of years.
Correct.
You know, probably 2 or 3 years. It starts in third grade, right?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
So, and they're still very cute at that age, so it's probably the high point of my day, I must say, to go in and meet some of these kids and talk to them.
So, George, I just wanted to give you a chance because we didn't we spoke that there were 3 school board positions open in the Hudson City School District. and three people running. But do you have school board races in Taconic Hills?
We do. There are two board positions that are open, and there are five people that are running for them. I was voted in. Took a 3-year term. My term is up this year, and I've decided to run again. There are another person on our current Board of Education, Christine Perry, is running again, and three new people have now decided to run to challenge for the seats.
You know, one of the things I wanted to mention, a lot of people don't understand this, but the school budget is a 40 and change million dollars, right? And the city of Hudson budget is only $4.5 million. So it's, you know, what people don't really understand is that there's a not very many people that get engaged and run for these seats and are involved in the school boards, and you know, when you have you have local governments where there's any number of people scrambling for, you know, a limited number of seats, and then. A school budget is 10 times that, and then no one's really interested in getting involved in the process, and it's funny.
I think, you know, as a board member, I've been fully committed. You know, it's a daunting task to be fully informed all the time, because you're making, you know, you have huge fiduciary responsibility, and in order to meet the needs, you have to know what's going on. Mm-hmm. You can't just open an email once every 2 weeks. You know, I speak to our superintendent probably 4 or 5 times a week, and I've been involved in a million different things. From, you know, you realize the inner workings when you're on a committee like the audit committee or something that goes on with education or a liaison committee, and you realize how much effort you have to give in order to be an effective board member. I do things 110%, and I believe that you have to do that on these boards in order to make the boards work. You know, there's 9 people on our board. There's a lot of different opinions. There are times when you're behind closed doors where it's not pretty, but ultimately the goal is to provide the best education we can for our students, the most cost effectively for our taxpayers, and to support the teachers and the superintendent and the administrators to hopefully continue to have a great place for our kids to go to school.
So we're going to take one more quick break. Lynn, can you stay with us for the last 10 minutes?
Sure.
Okay, so we'll be right back, and we'll close it up in just a moment. And we're back at issue. So we have just a couple of minutes left. So I wanted to just have a little go around and just identify yourself again, so people know who it is that's speaking when we go around.
Okay, this is Jack Howda, superintendent in Hudson, and I want to thank Victor and Deborah for this opportunity to be here today. I didn't quite know what to expect, and it's been a very engaging conversation. I'm glad I'm here. I also want to congratulate or note the work of George and Peter as board members in their respective districts. I'm in education over 30 years now, and every board that I've ever had contact with, all of the members really do have the best interests of the students in the district at heart and in their mind, and I know they do. They may not always agree, and that's okay. A lot can be learned from that, but I want to congratulate them for their service. It's a volunteer job, and it's probably one of the most difficult political positions in the county, so I certainly recognize that. And in the end, we have a 9.8% tax levy increase, not 10%. And I would encourage everybody to exercise their right to vote. It was a difficult process. It will continue to be difficult. Certainly, we're looking to open up lines of communication, have everybody have a better understanding of the budget process in and of itself. We'll work with that for next year's budget. Dan and I are already talking about next year's budget. But the main thing is go out Tuesday, vote on your budget, and vote for your board members of choice. Be involved, and then let that involvement and vote follow up with coming to board meetings. We'd love to see you.
This is George Lagoni from Taconic Hills. I too want to thank everybody, and I appreciate those kind words, Jack. But the reality is, on May 17th, our budget is 2.78%. tax levy. I would appreciate if everybody got out and voted. And I also, you know, it's not a popularity contest. We should vote for those board members that will do the job. It's important. Very difficult times. And the level of commitment that's needed to help these districts survive is very big. And the it's important that you make a very good choice right now, because our districts are all suffering. And, you know, Board of Education is a very important part of the solution. Thank you very much for having me.
Lynn, do you want to jump in next?
Sure. This is Lynn Swanaker. I want to echo Jack's comments about boards of education and the kind of commitment that people make. It's considerable. They do it for no pay, and it's a lot of information. It's a very, especially when it comes to the budget, it's a very specific kind of financial process, and I think we're too easy. It's too easy to criticize as opposed to understanding the full process. I mean, that being said, people have to get out and vote, and people have to know who is sitting on the Board of Education, and I think the community needs to be informed about the issues so that they know how to make those choices.
Great, thanks.
Yes, this is Dan Barrett, and I too would like to thank you. Thanks for this opportunity. I think it's great. I would like to even offer in the future, if you had more of interest and wanted us to come back, or
absolutely,
me to come back at all, I think the more we can make the public aware of what we're dealing with, I think the better. I think there'll be more understanding. With that in mind, you know, we will keep our pencils sharp in the business office, and we will continue daily to look for cost-saving measures all the time to free up the money to get the job done for the educators and do the good work that they need to do for the great students that we're all dealing with. So thank you. And
great. Thank you.
That's Peter Meyer, board member, and I just want to say one of the nice perks about being on the board is having a freshly sharpened pencil and at our desk at every board meeting. It's probably the only time I see it. But one very important thing, and I think it's to try to put a positive light on this, is that community involvement is so essential to running a school district. I mean, it's a cliche I know used by Hillary Clinton. It takes a village to raise a child. It also takes a village to educate a child. So the most impressive change in the last 4 or 5 years that I've seen in Hudson is that our doors are open. Mr. Howe's doors are open. We need members of the community to help out in any way they can. Just give a call. We'll tell you how to help us. And then that makes the board members' jobs easier and makes school district jobs easier. But in the end, what it does most of all is it helps educate our kids. So, and thank you guys for doing this show, because that helps to get the word out.
Absolutely.
I'd like to remind the public that copies of the budget are available online on the school district's websites and available in paper copies at the schools. And it's not so intimidating once you open it to read it. And there are people in the administrations of both these schools who will answer questions. And it's a way to learn more about the district and to become more involved. And, you know, it may be, as funding for schools drop off, programs like the Reading Mentorship Program, Power Lunch, will be ways in which the public can have a profound effect on helping students get a leg up in life and go on to their higher grades with more proficiency. So don't forget to vote on May 17th.
And you mentioned earlier, just so people are aware of that, the Columbia paper has an election guide for the school districts?
Yeah, we do. Every district in Columbia County, there's lots of details about tax levies and school board members people who are running for election and other stuff.
Super. I want to thank our guests for coming in, Jack Howe and George Lagonia, Dan Barrett, Peter Meyer, and especially to my co-host, Deborah Gilbert from the Columbia paper. It was great to have you here. I wanted to let everybody know about something that's coming up this is off the subject, another thing completely, but on Wednesday, May 18th at 6 p.m. at St. Mary's Academy, there will be a workshop for people who are having problems paying their mortgage or paying their taxes, in danger of foreclosure. And it's really going to be a great event. The workshop was organized by City Treasurer Eileen Halloran, and she's really put a lot of effort into this, and I think it's going to be a fantastic effort, particularly for people who are in distress. It will help provide paths to financial stability, get yourself out of the hole, make sure that you don't lose your house. There'll be representatives from Housing Resources there. There'll be several banks, Seth Rapport from Valley Mortgage. There'll be representatives from the Department of Social Services, the Office of the Aging, Columbia Opportunities, Legal Aid. So if you're having trouble, or even if you're worried, this really could be a way for people to come and find a path out of the financial distress that you may be finding yourself in. You know, with the economy the way it is, and taxes rising, and all of the problems that we're facing economically, a lot of people are having trouble through no fault of their own, What this event is also going to be doing is helping to make sure that you're receiving all the benefits that you're entitled to, that you're getting your STAR exemptions and other exemptions on your property taxes that you may be eligible for, Social Security or food stamps or any of these things that could help you get a leg up and save your house or get yourself on a better financial footing. So I hope that people will attend, and if you know anyone who is having trouble with their mortgage or their taxes, and you might want to share the information, there are flyers at City Hall in Hudson, and certainly at the Treasurer's office. Treasurer Halloran would be happy to speak to people in advance or and get you a flyer and everything. So just to remind everybody, it's Wednesday, May 18th at St. Mary's Academy, 6 p.m. And St. Mary's Academy is 301 Allen Street. It's the corner of 3rd Street in Hudson.
Just, Victor, can the voting poll, where the polls are open on for the May 17th vote, I don't think, did we mention that?
No.
So if you're in the, you live in Hudson, you vote at, correct me please, John L. Edwards, and the polls are open between noon and 9 p.m. If you live in Greenport, the voting location is Greenport Firehouse, number one. The Livingston is
Livingston Town Hall.
Stockport?
Town Hall.
Did I miss?
Claverick Firehouse.
So. And the polls, again, are open from noon to 9 p.m.
And, George, do you want to let people know where the polls are in Taconic Hills?
I believe it's just in Taconic Hills School.
Yeah, at the Veterans.
At the Veterans Room, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And between 12 and 9 as well.
Great.
And I don't know, too, I mentioned that if you live in Hudson and you want to see, it's actually the greatest part of the election is coming to the meeting after the election closes, and you get to watch Danny Barrett sit on the phone and take the numbers from all the polling places, and you get the results right there.
Five.
It's a great event.
I have the other school districts. Chatham is 9 to 9 at the elementary school, and middle school? No, MED Elementary. Germantown is noon to 9 in the lobby of the school. And Ichabod Crane is 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. in the Ichabod Crane High School gym. New Lebanon is noon to 9 at the elementary school.
So this is At Issue. We'll be back next week. Next week we're going to be talking about all kinds of judicial races, and because there's a lot going on there. And I want to thank everybody for listening. and especially my co-host, Deborah Gilbert from the Columbia Paper. And thanks, everybody, for joining us. Lynn, especially, thanks for calling in on your while you're away. And we'll be back next week on WGXE 90.7.